I'm going to call the House Transportation Committee to order and welcome everybody. Looks like we're filtering in now. I just wanted to let everybody know we're going to open a public hearing on 2385. We'll lose about four members of our committee around 2 o'clock. So if we, you know, if we move this well, everybody will get to hear all the testimony. And if not, then we'll just have a smaller group of people to listen. It's public hearing, and I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2385. And I'm going to start out by inviting up Representative Chuck Riley, Representative Mitch Greenleck, and Senator Jenny Burdick. And Patrick, before they get started, we better say what we're hearing today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2385 prohibits smoking in a motor vehicle while a person age 16 or younger is in the vehicle. It creates a graduated fine schedule for first, second, and subsequent offenses.
Welcome, and I don't know what order you want to go in. But
I'll start out, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Chuck Riley, representative representing Hillsborough, Corneas, and Forest Grove. I just wanted to make a few remarks. If government has any role whatsoever, part of it has to be protecting the people who can't protect themselves. That includes the elderly, the disabled, and children. And, you know, we've spend a lot of time. We've passed a lot of bills which do protect people in many circumstances. Child safety seats, booster seats, seat belt laws, bicycle helmets, toxic toys, and many others. So, you know, this bill is not a stretch from there. One of the worst places for smoke is in a car. The toxic level of smoke in cars is about 4.5 times the level which is regarded safe for children. It's the most toxic environment that children are ever placed in as far as smoke. And it's time that we do something about that. We all know that smoking is dangerous. You know, we all know that smoking in a vehicle causes higher concentration of toxic smoke. And we all know that asthma is the leading cause of school absences. We know that secondhand smoke is the leading preventable cause of respiratory illness. So we can't wait any longer. You know, this is something, its time has come. We need to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Well, I'm going to let you self-select here.
I'll go next, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Mitch Greenleck, House District 33, Northwest Portland. North out to Representative Edwards' district. I mean, the West out to Representative Edwards' district. I'm very happy to be here, and I really want to congratulate Representative Riley for moving this forward. I think many of you, I spent much of my life as a health researcher dealing particularly with smoking cessation and with other preventive medicine issues. And it seems to me this is a critical issue. I think just the passage of this bill would create an environment that would almost instantaneously stop adults smoking in automobiles with children. I don't think this is a matter of having to haul cars over and arrest people because they're smoking. I remember getting testimony on the bill I was carrying to have helmets for kids on skateboards and other roller sports, and I heard a mother testifying that that her son would get on his bike, take his skateboard, put his helmet on because it was the law, ride to the skateboard park, take his helmet off, and then skateboard without a helmet. And it's very clear that it's in our ability here to do something that can really help in terms of the health of children. You're going to hear lots of testimony Some of you will. Others of you may be gone already, but you'll hear a lot of testimony on the science of the toxicity of secondhand cigarette smoke, particularly in a closed environment. And when you hear that testimony, you need to remember how immature the respiratory system of young children is and how particularly vulnerable they are to this kind of toxin. If somebody was going to propose a scientific experiment where you put children in a compartment the size of the inside of a car and expose them to cigarette smoke to test the effect of it, there's no ethics committee in the country that would allow that experiment to take place because of the clear and obvious toxicity to a very vulnerable subject that would produce. We're not an experiment in this state. We live in real life. But the fact is, as you drive down the highway, you see so many instances with a sign on back, child on board, to provide some safety, and the parent smoking in the front seat of the car. I mean, that just is so odd to me that a parent would purposely injure the health of their children. Well, I think the answer is they don't purposely injure the health of their children. It's not clear to them that it's an issue. It's not clear to them how serious that issue is. And by putting into statute a prohibition for this behavior, I think it really will alert folks to the importance of the issue and how important it is to do something about it. So I'm here to lend support. I hope you'll act favorably on this bill and move it on and get it toward putting it into our statutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Beyer and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ginny Burdick, and I represent the people of Senate District 18. As my colleagues here have testified so well, it is our responsibility as elected officials to protect the health and safety of all Oregonians, including our children. To this end, during the 2007 legislative session, that's not my phone. I have it on airplane mode. I was a chief sponsor of the Clean Indoor Air Act to protect Oregon workers from the negative effects of secondhand smoke in the workplace. So Oregonians no longer had to choose between their health and their paycheck. On January 1st of this year, as we know, we celebrated this victory as the law went into effect. But our work is not done. Now it's time to move on and protect our children from the effects of secondhand smoke in vehicles. As we've heard before, secondhand smoke exposure is the most preventable cause of respiratory illness in children, and children exposed to secondhand smoke show greater likelihood of lower respiratory infections, sudden instant death syndrome, ear infections, and severity of asthma symptoms. And I know this very traumatically from my own little sister's experience. I have twin sisters who are 14 years younger than me. And we all grew up in a smoking household, and I remember several terrifying times where one of them was taken to the hospital on the brink of death with asthma attacks. And this was simply secondhand smoke in the home. And you can imagine what the effects in a car, which is a much more confined space. Studies have shown that secondhand smoke exposure is a terrible issue in a car, even if the windows are open. Unfortunately, despite all the research illuminating the effects of secondhand smoke, many parents, many smokers, continue to smoke in confined spaces, and you just have to assume it's because they don't know. Sometimes the work we do here in the legislature, the main effect of it is educational. When you declare something illegal, it really does get people's attention, and it focuses attention on that and changes behavior without a lot of confrontation. So I want to thank this committee from my heart for having this hearing today on this issue. I strongly encourage you to send this to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation, and I will really look forward to seeing this in the Senate. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Committee, any questions? Representative Widener.
Senator Burdick, I'm just looking here, and secondhand smoke by their families is what you're saying at home and in the car. Do you think your bill's going far enough if you're going to say at home as well?
You know, I think we have to take issues as they come to us. This is a very good bill. Obviously, you know, from a lot of standpoints, it becomes a more complicated issue when you talk about anything that goes on in the home. So, you know, obviously, it would be safest for children if they were in smoke-free environments for their whole day, at school, at home, in the car. But this bill it pertains to cars, and I think it's, from my standpoint, it's a no-brainer. And I would also like to point out to the committee that my legislative aide, Caitlin Cushing, actually did a lot of research on this, and you actually have testimony with footnotes, which in my experience is news. But I wanted to point that out to the committee as a resource for
Madam
your future.
Chair.
Yes.
I did note that, and I was very impressed.
Me too.
So was I.
Go ahead.
Representative Widener, another.
Let me tack on to that, if I may. I'm not looking, this is my bill, I'm not looking any farther than this bill, and the reason it's cars is there are a couple of reasons. One, we have a history of legislating safety in automobiles, and number two, it is the most toxic environment that children are ever placed in.
Representative Widener.
Reason, I mean, is what we're dealing with is someone's personal property here, obviously, same as their home. Now, if they smoke in the car when they're not there and then they get into it later, there's still smoke residue in that car, is there not? So, I mean, if we're going to address the problem, shouldn't we just be looking at making smoking illegal? Or what about the person that's smoking when they're pregnant? I mean, that's my question here is how far do you want to go with this? Because if we're going to take a little bite, why don't we just address the whole problem?
Representative, if you want to put out that bill, I'd be happy to help you.
I'll sign on too.
Me too. We also have a strong precedent of, you know, we require booster seats in cars. We require seat belts in cars. And this is, you know, just another safety measure in a car, as far as I'm concerned.
Madam Chair, may I respond? The serious answer to your question is that tobacco is the most dangerous, addicting drug we deal with in our legislative issues. And the fact is there are still just under 20% of adults that are addicted to this substance. We outlaw marijuana. We subsidize alcohol. In fact, we profit from alcohol. And we subsidize tobacco. So we as a society haven't really figured out how to deal with tobacco, and we're certainly not going to seriously outlaw it. I mean, that's just obviously not going to happen. But the fact is we need to take every step we can, A, to treat that addiction and to prevent more people from smoking, which really has to happen pretty much at the adolescent level. One of the arguments for increasing cigarette taxes. And we have to educate people about the dangers of their behavior. I said before, and I really believe it, I don't think any parents want to specifically harm their children. So what we need to do, it seems to me, as a state government, is to help create the culture within which there's more understanding of the consequences of this behavior and more help for people to stop smoking. I dealt with smoking cessation research for about 20 years, and there are very few adults who smoke who really deep down wouldn't want to quit, but the costs are very significant to them, and it's a very difficult issue. So we take steps as we can. We do what we can. We help to protect the workers in bars and restaurants, as well as the patrons, by Senator Burdick's bills. And this, it seems to me, is one reasonable step forward to help educate adults about the consequences of their behavior and to help protect their children. And we're not going to outlaw smoking. Reality tells us that. And we're certainly not going to outlaw smoking in somebody's own home. I mean, that isn't real. But this is a step we can take. That's a modest step, but that could be very helpful.
Thank you.
Just another follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. With it being an education process, because, I mean, I'm not a smoker, don't smoke, don't like smoke. My restaurant's non-smoking inside. But I still think it's an owner or operator's choice, a person's choice. They're making that conscious decision, and I'm thinking for an education purpose, rather than putting a law on it and then start invading into their car, if we shouldn't maybe do more education with signage where cigarettes are sold, because we have warning labels on cigarettes. I think everybody knows they're bad. I think a person who's smoking in the car with their child in there, there's bigger problems probably going on in that child's life than the smoking that's going on there. There's education and parenting classes that probably should be addressed at that point. And I think these are things we need to look at rather than outlawing smoking in a car. And I'm just wondering, maybe we looked at possibly putting up signs saying, hey, it's not good to smoke in confined spaces with children or around children. That way it addresses the home so they know to go outside and smoke when they're home, and actually make something a little broader that really does protect children in their everyday environment rather than just inside of an auto, because this would be a tough piece of legislation for us to enforce.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, this bill in and of itself was not designed for education. This bill was designed to protect children's health. And, you know, putting up a sign is a great idea. Education of parents is a terrific idea. But in the meantime, children are being harmed. Smoking is harming our children, and it is our duty as legislators to stop harm where we see it.
And I had Representative Berger had a comment, and I know nope. Representative Schaffler and I did.
I did.
And
it was called, not me.
Oh, okay. All right. So I had Schaffler, then you. All right.
Well, the highest law of the land in my house says there will be no smoking in my house, and I definitely abide by that. Pardon me?
That's the boss.
That's exactly right. I wouldn't smoke in it even if I did. But someone who thoroughly enjoys a good cigar or two on occasion, and because I am a parent, I ended up voting to ban cigarettes and smoke in taverns, bars, restaurants, public places. But I find it ironic, almost, that this bill came after that one. This one should have came first, in my humble opinion. You're exactly right, Representative Riley. This is no choice if you're a little bit. And I see it all the time, and I'm just struck by it. Anyone who I feel sorry for them. They're so addicted. They have to light up, even though that little baby's in that car seat. It's unbelievable for me to understand what's going through their minds, but I thoroughly support this bill. I'm glad you brought it forward, and I hope we work it and pass it to the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things. First of all, for clarification, it's probably Mrs. Schaffler who's the highest law of the land in the household. Just for the record.
I don't think so.
No, it's
me.
That's way out of my league, baby.
I wanted to make sure for the record everybody knew what Representative Schaffler was.
That's right.
I'd like to thank you guys for bringing this forward. It's very important. There are just a couple of things I'd like to get on the record. First of all, we have there's a diminished expectation of privacy in vehicles. That underlies, I think, any regulation that we can put here. Representative Widener's comments, I think, are well taken, and we should defend property rights. And I'm sure that the the public defenders in our state would be very happy to hear about bolstering the rights of individuals to their privacy in their cars. But as it is, cars are the most heavily regulated activity that the average person engages in our state, probably in our nation. Probably no other activity is so heavily regulated. We regulate the exhaust that comes out of the tailpipes for the effects that it has on people outside of the cars. The cigarette you smoke in your car cannot be flicked out of a window for fear that it will catch things outside of the car on fire and cause great detrimental effect to the outside world. But to think that we wouldn't regulate cigarette smoking within the vehicle itself to protect the child from the actions of their parents, to me, just seems irrational and off base. And I'm with Representative Schaffler on this. I cannot believe that this hasn't been a law already, and I look forward to supporting it greatly. So thank you guys for your efforts.
Thank you. Seeing no other comments for this panel, thank you. Thank you for testifying, and thank you for hearing about kids.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is Mo Spencer in the room? Nope. Okay. Alejandro? And I'm not going to try the last name. You can say it. Haral. Okay. And we'll bring up a panel. How about and Dana Kay and Reagan Gray?
Chair Beyer, Vice Chairs Call and Gilman, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Alejandro Queral. I am State Director of Government Affairs for the American Heart Association. On behalf of our members, I am here today to urge you to vote yes on HB 2385 to protect children from the dangers of secondhand smoke in automobiles. The harmful health effects of secondhand smoke are well documented. Among adults, secondhand smoke's exposure is associated with cardiovascular disease, cancer, and respiratory and reproductive problems. Secondhand smoke exposure before and after birth puts children at a great risk of abnormal blood pressure, cleft palates and lips, childhood leukemia, attention deficit disorder, and childhood wheezing. Secondhand smoke is a known cause of sudden infant death syndrome, acute lower respiratory tract infections, asthma induction and exacerbation, chronic respiratory symptoms, and middle ear infections in children. A 2007 report published in Circulation, the Journal of the American Heart Association, revealed that secondhand smoke can damage the endothelial lining of the arteries, which in turn impairs the blood vessel's ability to dilate. Endothelial dysfunction in early childhood can lead to hardening of the arteries and is associated with conventional atherosclerosis risk factors, such as high cholesterol, diabetes mellitus, and obesity. The authors of the study concluded that even modest exposure to tobacco smoke may impact early development of atherosclerosis. Moreover, researchers found evidence that damage to the arteries from secondhand smoke may be only partially reversible even after exposure to secondhand smoke has ceased. Not surprisingly, the authors stressed the importance of implementing smoke-free environments for children. Researchers at Harvard University School of Public Health have found that levels of secondhand smoke concentrations in cars are alarmingly high, even after only one cigarette. Particulate matter, a byproduct of tobacco smoke, was found in concentration levels higher than the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's 24-hour exposure levels. While the EPA has determined that 2.5 micron particulate matter concentrations higher than 40 micrograms per cubic meter is unhealthy for sensitive groups, which includes children and the elderly, particulate matter concentrations after only one cigarette shoot up to concentrations averaging 272 micrograms per cubic meter and as high as 505 micrograms per cubic meter when the windows are closed. Even with the windows open, however, concentrations were still higher than EPA exposure levels. The authors of this research concluded that, quote, smoking in cars under typical driver and traffic conditions provides potentially unsafe secondhand smoke exposure. These studies show that private passenger cars are yet another environment with the potential to yield high levels of secondhand smoke, potentially resulting in harmful long-term effects, health effects in children. And as such, we urge you to swiftly report this legislation out of committee as soon as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And committee, I think I'll go ahead and let the panel all speak, and then if there are questions, we'll...
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dana Kay, and I'm the Executive Director for the American Lung Association in Oregon. The American Lung Association strongly supports this legislation, and we urge you to support it as well. It's our mission to save lives by improving lung health and preventing lung disease. Our primary reason for supporting 2385 is the protection of kids with asthma. There are 73,000 children in Oregon with asthma, 8.4%. Asthma is the leading cause of student absenteeism due to a chronic disease. Nationwide, 400,000 to 1 million asthmatic children have their condition worsened by exposure to secondhand smoke. Asthma is the third leading cause of hospitalization among children under the age of 15. In Oregon in 2005, hospitalizations in which asthma was a primary discharge diagnosis cost more than $23 million. Changing this public policy will bring an awareness to this issue and allow more of Oregon's children to live a healthy life. Please support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Reagan Gray. I'm policy analyst for Children First for Oregon. And I would like to express our support for House Bill 2385, which will ban smoking in cars with children present. Children First for Oregon's mission is to make Oregon a place where all children thrive, and we believe that all children deserve a healthy start in life. But exposure to secondhand smoke can stunt a child's healthy start because the exposure is especially damaging to infants and children whose lungs are still developing. A child's exposure to secondhand smoke can result in the decreased lung function, causing coughing, wheezing, phlegm, and breathlessness, in addition to acute lower respiratory tract infections such as pneumonia and bronchitis. Studies show that childhood secondhand smoke exposure increases health risks and doctor's visits. The exposure causes a buildup of phlegm in the ear, resulting in 790,000 visits to healthcare providers, often resulting in childhood operations and childhood hearing loss. Exposure to secondhand smoke causes over 202,000 asthma episodes in asthmatic children, and annually it causes 430 sudden infant death syndrome deaths that are associated with secondhand smoke. So these childhood health issues are completely preventable, and we think that House Bill 2385 will go a great distance in helping that. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee, any questions? Representative Widener. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you think this bill goes far enough? I mean, that's my point. Should we be looking at throwing in homes and pregnant women as well with this? I mean, if you really want to protect children, you're saying secondhand smoke in pregnant women. Well, the woman who's smoking while she's pregnant is getting a lot more than secondhand. So, I mean, do we need to do an amendment and add more to this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Widener, the bill does go far enough because it protects children while they're inside the car, inside a confined environment. Addressing concerns about pregnant mothers, for example, that are smoking, fortunately, we have the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program that intends to provide mothers with education information and helps them not smoke while they're pregnant. So I think that there are other mechanisms by which we can address those concerns that you raise. But in the meantime, as Representative Riley has mentioned, this is precisely the role that government must serve in protecting children, particularly in this confined environment and in an automobile, which, as Representative Carl has said, is highly regulated already. So we think that this is it strikes the right balance between privacy interests and protecting those who are most vulnerable.
So the pregnant women, the counseling and the training education that you give them while they're pregnant is sufficient?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, statistics have shown that pregnant mothers smoke less. There's been a reduction in smoking rates among pregnant mothers while the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program has been in effect since 1997. We do believe that that is, and it's not just my belief, but also the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, recognize these as effective ways of reducing consumption among adults.
Representative Boone.
I'll just top off that, too. Is, you know, you're never going to get all the people all the time to pay attention to all the education that's out there. There's a certain part of our population who
probably wouldn't do it on their own. And so I have experienced people in my family and friends and who did smoke during pregnancy with their children in the car, et cetera. And virtually all of them have some sort of health issue, mostly respiratory. Don't know what's going to happen later on in life. That being said, I also have had a very good friend die from secondhand smoke exposure over a long period of time, who was an adult, of course, but adults have a choice to ride with someone in a car who might smoke or not, but a child does not. So I think that's part of the issue here, too.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm struck by the value of the idea, but I'm also struck by the fact that only four states have done something about it. What's going on? Explain to us why only four states when the idea seems so good.
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, that is a good question, and I certainly hope that more states move forward with similar legislation. I can tell you, however, that yes, only four states currently have that legislation in place. There are a number of other states, including Montana and Idaho, I believe, that are considering similar legislation. So this is, I think, going to become the norm as we move forward. But frankly, it's despite the obviousness or the potential obviousness of it, it's a relatively novel idea. So I think in time you will see that this is the norm rather than the exception.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. That didn't really answer the question. There must be a reason in those other states that they're not doing it. Is it privacy? Is it personal freedom? Is it control of the car? Is it lawsuits by folks? What is it?
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, my understanding is that most states have not even considered this legislation, so there hasn't been a wide debate over this issue. So frankly, Oregon is one of the leading states as we move forward with the debate.
Okay. I probably should move on, but I do. I'm trying to figure out where I am on this bill, so I was hoping I'd figure this out today. But I think whether you have any comments on the fact that as a state, we are pretty dependent on the tobacco tax to fund a lot of stuff. And as a policy, we've really budgeted on that. So as we start moving forward to banning and reducing that, what messages are we sending out there to people? Is that, I mean, I have a bill for a cigarette tax for special needs transportation, and someone in DHS was pretty offended that I have this bill out there. For one thing, because they want to make sure that people who are getting their share of the cigarette tax are held harmless. For one thing, which they are. But the other thing is that they're concerned that the increase will reduce the amount of money that's coming in to existing programs. So I think we're really sending kind of a mixed message on our policies. And maybe someday we're going to have to kind of own up to what we really want.
Chair Beyer, I'd like to just address that for a second. I can understand how we're looking forward and thinking that, but the fact of the matter is we still haven't curbed the problem of tobacco use in Oregon, and even though we will maybe see the tax go down over time, it's a very predictable decline, and in the interim, we need the money to go to tobacco prevention and education. We need these kinds of policies and put into place so that we can deal with the problem. We still know that tobacco is the number one preventable cause of death in Oregon. It's going to be a long time before we see enough decrease that you're going to see the tax disappear.
Okay. Well, on that, thank you. I appreciate the testimony. We have Dr. Don Austin and Dr. Katrina Hedberg.
Chair Beyer and members of the committee, My name is Donald Austin. I'm a physician epidemiologist, and I am president-elect of the Oregon Public Health Association. That association strongly supports House Bill 2385, and the reason that they support this bill is because it protects children. And this is a group of people that are strongly, they're basically devoting their lives, these are the public health professionals in the state devoting their life to helping to protect public health. You've heard about a number of diseases that is caused by secondhand smoke. I want to include with that, wasn't mentioned bronchopneumonia and ear infections as well as asthma and some of the others. I want to also emphasize that it's especially important to protect children covered by Medicaid for two reasons, and one is that adults covered by Medicaid smoke about twice as much as the general population. There's about twice the percentage of those adults that smoke as the general population. And when Medicaid kids get these tobacco-related illnesses, it's the taxpayer that pays for these. And so if we can help to reduce those illnesses with their attendant costs, that's what we should do. I think there would be no opposition if we knew of parents that would strap their kids into chairs, put the chairs into a closet, and then go in there and smoke cigarettes in the closet. I think that we would also support bills that outlawed that practice, even in the House. We already recognize dangers to children from exposure to tobacco smoke. We have a policy that protects foster children from being in cars where it's smoking. We're one of 13 states that have explicit legislation or policy prohibiting smoking in foster homes or in vehicles in which children are transported. And we now need to close the gap and protect the rest of the children. So this is an important bill, and it's not a hard bill to support, in my estimation. It doesn't cost a lot of money. It doesn't take money away from other important programs, and it reduces the illnesses that are tobacco-related illnesses from exposure to tobacco smoke among children. And if there were any impact on costs, it's likely to be an impact of savings. So on behalf of Oregon's professional public health community, we urge you to pass this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Beyer and members of the committee, I'm Katrina Hedberg. I'm the interim state epidemiologist in the public health division in the Department of Human Services. And I'm also here today in support of House Bill 2385, which would prohibit smoking in a motor vehicle when a child under the age of 18 is present in the car. Secondhand tobacco smoke is harmful to children. You've heard about a number of the health effects, which include ear infections, upper respiratory, sudden infant death. I'll add something to the list, meningococcal disease. Here in Oregon, we had a higher rate than was seen in other parts of the country, and because secondhand smoke damages the mucous membranes, children in households with parents who smoke and are exposed to secondhand smoke have a higher risk of meningococcal disease as well, and also an increased severity of asthma symptoms. Children exposed to secondhand smoke have more medical visits, hospitalized more frequently, and lose more days from school. The Department of Human Services is committed to reducing the number of tobacco-related illnesses and deaths in children. In 2006, the U.S. Surgeon General released the Health Consequences of Involuntary Exposure to Secondhand Smoke, a report to the Surgeon General. And this report summarized the current scientific data and concluded that there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. Smoking in cars produces suspended particles at levels considered hazardous to children by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, even when the driver's window is slightly open. In addition, tobacco smoke in cars produces carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas. Children are particularly at risk because of developing bodies make them more susceptible to secondhand smoke's effects, and due to their small size, they breathe more rapidly than adults, and so are exposed to more secondhand smoke. Currently, four states, Arkansas, California, Maine, and Louisiana, have laws prohibiting smoking in a private vehicle when children are present. Other jurisdictions, including Puerto Rico, Rockland County, New York, and West Long Island Branch, New Jersey, have laws prohibiting smoking in a private vehicle when children are present. According to a recent poll, 60% of Oregonians are in favor of banning smoking in privately owned cars when children are present. While 80% of current smokers in Oregon have at least one child under the age of 18 have rules forbidding smoking in the home, only 46% have similar rules in the car. Chair Beyer and members of the committee, I encourage you to protect Oregon's children from exposure to secondhand smoke in cars by passing this important legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee question? Representative Widener.
Since I'm active today, how many people currently are populations or smokers in the state of Oregon? Are we looking at 5% of the population? Do you have those numbers by chance?
Go ahead.
It's just under, of adults, it's just under 20%.
20% of adults are smokers?
Alma? Are you done? Okay. All right.
And I would just like to thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to thank both of you, but Dr. Austin, I found the example that you drew of a child strapped to a chair in a closet and a parent smoking in there. I think that puts in stark contrast what we're dealing with here today. And I would just like to say for the record that I think everybody on this committee, no matter what the revenue impact would be of making sure that was illegal, we would decide to make that illegal. So I thank you guys for your testimony. I found it very insightful.
Thank you.
And I have a quick question. I think one of the legislators mentioned that they thought that just having this bill on the books itself would cause a reduction in people doing this as opposed to starting to be out there ticketing. Do you have any, and I know you wouldn't have any figures on this, but in past laws that we've passed, do you have figures that kind of support that?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. I also don't have exact numbers, but we do know from smokers that having a number of things that help them, if you will, support to wanting to quit or staying quit are very important. Most people, when there's a law, do want to follow the law, regardless of whether or not they're going to get a ticket or whether it's going to be the law itself is going to be enforced. So I think that this kind of law will encourage people who currently smoke maybe to quit or to stay quit, or at least they have yet another, if you will, a support for them not smoking in a particular setting.
Okay, thank you, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. There's a lot going on here. I'd imagine, if I'm just going to predict, we may see a reduction possibly in cigarette smoking, therefore revenue. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the demographics, the majority of cigarette smokers today are largely low-income folks. I think I'm accurate on that. And in all likelihood, more likely to need and require public services, health care, for example. So I don't know if there's any data or any projection or statistical trend projection here, but I'd imagine if they quit smoking, if fewer children are sick, fewer children are going to have to go to the doctor. Therefore, you're spending less money on health care. You may, over a 20-year period, see a measurable reduction in the need to provide health care to children that may be more than offset any loss in cigarette tobacco taxes. So, and there's four states that have it. I have no idea who they are or how long they've had it, but I was wondering, and I'm not asking for it today, but if there's any data showing the reduction in the purchase of cigarettes. And I imagine that other data could be possible. I don't know if there's a correlation that can be absolutely attributed to that. But am I off base here? But I think I'm not. If you got all that, I'm not articulating it very well.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, I'll try to address some of it. Tobacco control, it's not sort of there's no silver bullet. We need a comprehensive approach, and a number of different things address it, of which this would be one piece of it, prohibiting people smoking in cars with children. You're also correct in stating that the prevalence of smoking does vary by income level, and that people who have less education and have lower incomes tend to have a higher prevalence of smoking. And again, a number of those people, you might imagine, would be on the Oregon Health Plan or receiving those kinds of services. So the answer to your quick question is, how much money will we save in health care costs by this particular intervention? I don't know that anybody can answer that. We certainly have data in Oregon about how tobacco prevalence, the number of people or the percentage of smokers is going down, and the amount they smoke goes down. So consumption, even among people who remain current smokers, is declining. All of those things are good for the health of Oregonians as well as mortality. They're not dying from tobacco-related causes. So those things are all good. But again, assigning an exact dollar amount to this particular legislation, we would love to be able to do it, but that would be very challenging.
Representative Bone.
Thanks. And for Rep. Shoffler, and in one of my other committees, Human Services, we welcomed Dr. Melcone from the DHS, Public Health Division. He does have some numbers, and they're very compelling. They don't have amounts of money saved, only presumed, of course. But it was, one of his was Dr. Austin's number of two times the number of people who receive Medicaid benefits smoke two times more than those who don't. Of the people on there's X percentage of people on the health plan who smoke, and X percentage of the costs associated with health plan medical expenses are smoking related, and those numbers are available. They're pretty high. And I think your assumptions that the less people smoke, the healthier they'll be, the less money will be spent on smoking-related health issues, and adding children in, they'll probably be mentored at an early age not to smoke, not to start smoking.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And since we have someone from DHS, you actually might know the answer to this, but it seems like when I was going through one of the budgets, that there's like a $21 million reduction somewhere in that neighborhood in smoking, and we also are probably looking at another $1.20 a pack in tax that will be coming, because I think there's 60 from the Fed, and I think there's 60 to 80 cents coming from the state that could be going through this house. That could cause a huge reduction in smoking alone right there too. Which, what's that going to do to your revenues? Because are you seeing declining revenues in DHS? Because I could have swore I saw where there was $21 million, and maybe somebody up here on the committee knows the answer to that, too.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Widener, I'm not able, I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I can't address all the revenue issues, which are complicated, but we can get some of the figures for you related to that.
All right. Seeing no other questions, thank you for coming today. We really appreciate it. And the last one I have on my list is Brian DeLashman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a last-minute addition. I was up in Judiciary, and I'm kind of fell down here and got involved in the conversation. For the record, Brian DeLashman, I represent several different people, and let me start with one hat. I'll start with the ONA, the nurses' hat. Historically, the Oregon Nurses Association has come down in the area of secondhand smoke very strongly in support of these kinds of bills. We are still formulating our position on this, but I fully anticipate that they will come down in support of this bill the same way as they have on indoor clean air bills in the past. Now let me put my public safety hat on. I was asked by the proponents of this bill how public safety felt about this bill, and I had the opportunity yesterday to speak to my state troopers' board of directors and put the bill, there's actually several bills in front of them, and said, okay, tell me what your reaction is to this. And while their reaction was neutral or positive on the aspects of secondhand smoke and the impact on children. They did want me to caution everybody in this chamber that if the expectation is that every time somebody calls in because they see somebody driving down the highway with a child being exposed to smoke and the 911 call comes in that a state trooper is going to drop what they're doing and pull that that young mother over that's exposing their children to smoke, they have a lot of priorities on their plate. And so I guess the message to you is that as stretched as our state troopers are, as stretched as our local law enforcement folks are, although they would seek to enforce a statute that you passed, this is not at the very top of their priority list as far as enforcement. And they would hope that just the passage of the bill, in fact, does get the automatic enforcement, self-enforcement that's been mentioned before up, without them having to exert a lot of effort and expense to enforce the statute. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Time is short, so I appreciate it. And I'm glad you brought this forward, and I'm glad you're here, because this is a concern of mine with this particular bill, is this enforcement issue. And I would appreciate it, since we aren't in work session, that you would contact others in the law enforcement community and have them weigh in on the possibilities of enforcement, because I can foresee just that. My neighbor just went by. She was smoking with her kids. You're supposed to call 911 on that. And we have a lot of serious criminal issues, and that's the danger with criminalizing common behavior, is you put law enforcement in a terrible bind.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Berger, that's exactly our point. At the same time, we do in no way in law enforcement want to discourage you from protecting children. Our concern is a resources issue.
Yes. Representative Edwards.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. While I understand this may not be a high priority for state troopers, it's my understanding that the self-enforcement rate could be as high as 65% as it is with the seatbelt law. Well, do you have an estimate in terms of the degree of compliance you'd get just by passing the bill without any active enforcement?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, I heard those same numbers. I do not know. Actually, I do have some historical background on seatbelts. I was, on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association and another client, involved in passage of child infant seat restraints and ultimately seatbelt statutes in the state. And obviously, the numbers have gone up as there's been additional enforcement.
Right.
You do get a certain percentage that automatically, because it is the statute, will self-regulate themselves and follow the law. There is a, however, to get that next step, there is an enforcement component that's required to get to that next step. If the expectation is, as I've heard, 65% automatically would self-enforce, that's good in itself. If the expectation is that we're going to be able to get to the 85 or 95% like we are with seatbelts without some enforcement tools, I think we cannot expect that.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up, yeah.
As far as you know, are state troopers amenable to treating this as a secondary offense? In other words, if they pull someone over for a more high-priority offense, do they have any qualms about citing folks if this is the case?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, we did not discuss that as an option. And I wouldn't encourage you to go down that path. I don't know that it would make any difference to them.
Okay.
Representative Shaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian, in reference to Representative Berger's question or comment, you know, how many calls does 911 get today? Hey, my neighbor doesn't have their seatbelt on. They don't have their motorcycle helmet on. I'm sure there's sometimes that happens, but I wouldn't let something like that stand in the way of doing this.
Madam Chair, Representative Shoffler, the example that you just gave is the exact example that one of the state troopers actually gave me when this was discussed, was they do get phone calls in which somebody is traveling down the highway, they look over, somebody doesn't have a child in a seat restraint, they call 911 and expect a trooper to come and take care of the situation. So they do get those calls. They're a very, very small minority of the calls that they get in. But when the public, sees an infraction of any statute, they do expect law enforcement to enforce statutes. And so there is this public expectation that if I call, somebody will take care of it. And that's the one thing they wanted to caution everybody about is, you know, the self-enforcement has a lot of value to it, but the next step in order to get very high enforcement will take some effort on enforcement and some revenue.
Madam Chair, if I may, briefly. Well, Brian, I'm sure they do, but that would not in any way, shape, or form make me want to get rid of the penalty for not having a child in a restraining seat or a seatbelt. So logically, it's still, either way, it doesn't matter to me. People have lots of expectations, and we frequently let them down, but we still have to make policy that protects the most vulnerable. So,
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, to make my, I guess, my point more blunt, on behalf of the Oregon State Troopers Association here, I'm making a plea for additional revenue. You all know how shorthanded they are.
Yes,
and if there's expectations, obviously, that they're going to add more laws, more enforcement, we need more state troopers.
I appreciate that point. Believe me, Madam Chair. Brian.
Thank you. Representative Widener, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Brian, for being here today. Question for you, since with the revenue forecasts the way they are, and they're looking at cutting a lot of money out of the 911 budget as well, and we do have money, I wonder if we put a priority possibly on our safety part of the transportation budget, where we start running ads about smoking in cars with people in cars on radio, TV, and actually putting signage in stores where they sell cigarettes saying, hey, do not smoke in your car. If that would be a more appropriate thing to do at this time with the budget the way it is.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, let me just tell you, and I won't take much time, just a little story about infant seat restraints, and I think it'll answer your question. We tried for a number of sessions to pass in the early 80s infant seat restraints, and we were always one vote short on the Senate side. It finally passed, and the reason why it passed is the chair and the one vote that we needed finally became apparent and realized that he needed that extra incentive because his wife had always said, you need to buckle up that child, but until it became law, he didn't have her have the ability to say, it's the law, you have to do it. And there is a difference between something being in statute that is a penalty and has law, and a educational tool, and I think that's where you're headed with it. We tried to educate people about infant seat restraints, but until we passed the law, you didn't have that extremely high level of compliance or usage. So I think the same thing would happen here. I don't, again, in front of this committee, want to encourage anyone to say there's other options and it's purely education or it's purely enforcement. It's both. But that's an example of we now have very, very high uses of infant seat restraints, and it really came about because of the passage of the statute that required them.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Boy, everybody's got questions for me today.
This will be a relatively
I'm
easy
just
one.
I'm the drop-in guest today.
That'll tell you. That'll show
yeah,
you.
I'll stay out of here.
Yeah, but you
now
were the one.
And the cameras are over here.
To your earlier blunt admission, I had occasion to meet with Congressman DeFazio earlier today about the federal stimulus package that passed the U.S. House on Friday. There's approximately $5 million that would come to Oregon to hire new police officers. Assuming that the average cost of an officer is about $100,000, we could hire another 50. Would that be enough?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, we would welcome that money. Whether it's in additional troopers or, as you're all aware, in technology, mm-hmm. We are really short on technology as far as the ability for troopers to do their job efficiently when they're out in cars as compared to city and local and counties in the state. So we, too, are looking at the possibility of some federal stimulus dollars that could help us do our job better.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
This is more some help for Brian. I actually did do a ride-along with the state troopers, and they are very far behind the county and city police, even in Yamhill County and the rural districts, for the technology that they have inside their car, and they're supposed to be our elite police force, so there probably are some things that we could look at helping with them, especially if we're going to ask them to enforce more laws.
Madam Chair, I appreciate your indulgence in letting me come in and hijack this whole hearing on state trooper funding.
Well, I certainly appreciate you being here today. I do want to caution, when it comes to the public outreach and the information, we do have a lot of budget limits that we work under with that. In the highway fund, there, you know, the dollars are dedicated, and it gets very difficult to try to find dollars to do those kind of programs, which whenever we implement something new, does get very challenging to the department to get the, not so much the enforcement, but the compliance piece with that, the education piece. So, and I'm sure that, say, DHS probably doesn't, you know, isn't sitting there saying, well, we have dollars that we would like to do a public outreach program with. So, and I haven't seen anybody jump up and say that yet. So those are always the, you know, the programs that are almost necessary when we do policy, but they're the hardest ones to find the dollars to implement. So I think that, you know, we have to be careful when we start asking departments to do things and start thinking about what we want to get rid of when we do them. So, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just do we have a fiscal on this? And I wonder if we would need to get numbers from 911 operators to get an idea of what kind of call volume they could get from this and just base it off of what we had for seat belts.
Thank you. Since it's just up for a public hearing today, we don't have a fiscal. So if it would ever go into a work session, we'll have that information before we do that. And with that, thank you. And that was all I have signed up, and we do have a much smaller group of people here, but if there was someone that didn't get signed up that wanted to speak, I want to give them a chance. And seeing none, with that I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2385. And members, have a great weekend, and we are adjourned.